Chapter 14. Winter brings a chance. The damned has a name. The pylon at Kazergesh. Wintertide on Cadia. There had been glinting ice floes in the gunmetal waters of the Caducades that morning, and light snow had fallen on the moors. At that time of year, the foul corona of the Eye of Terror was visible even during the fleeting hours of daylight. The unholy mauve radiance of the nights became a violet fuzz in the cold daylight, like a badly blotted ink stain on white paper. It made us feel like we were under surveillance all the time. The eye, bloodshot, angry, peering down at us. Worst of all were the moor winds, cold and sharp as Acadian's bayonet, blowing down from Arctic latitudes. The high lakes were all frozen now, and lethal pogo-nip fogs haunted the bitter heaths and uplands. In the Cassia itself, it seemed like the locals had a morbid fear of heaters or window insulation. Chilly gales breathed down the hallways of the Minster and the Administratum building. Water froze in the pipes. Despite it all, the war bells sounded every few days, and the moors rolled with the sounds of winter manoeuvres. I began to imagine that the Cadians were simply shooting at each other to keep warm. 10.5 long, increasingly cold weeks after we had begun our systematic search of the Kazir's records, I was making my now habitual morning walk from the Minster of the Inquisition to the headquarters of the Interior Guard. I wore a thick fur coat against the cold and spike-soled boots to combat the sheet ice on the roads. I was miserable. The search had left us all pale and edgy, too many fruitless hours spent in dark rooms. There had been so many promising leads, links and traces of the Sons of Baal, unauthorized starship traffic, suspicious excise logs. They had all dwindled away into nothing. As far as we could make out, no living member of the Sons of Baal, or any living associate or family member, remained. There had been no pylon-related cult activity, not even registered xeno-archaeological work. I had interviewed specialist professors at the Universitari, and certain tech priests from the Mechanicus who were shown in the records as having expert knowledge of the pylons. Nothing. With Inchabel, Nail, or Fischig, I had travelled the region as far afield as Kazertyrok and Kazerbellen. A worker in the gun shops of Kazerbellen, who had been identified as a Baal cult member, turned out to simply have the same name, misfiled. A wasted 10-hour round trip by speeder. Amos had constructed a codifier model by which we checked record anomalies against the timetable of past cult activity. There seemed to be no correlation at all. I walked up the steps of the Ministry of Interior Defense and submitted myself to the clearance check in the postern guardhouse. It should have been a formality. I had been arriving at the same time almost every day for the last 75. I even recognized some of the guardsmen by sight. But still, it was like the first time I had ever been there. Papers were not only stamped, but read thoroughly and run through an anti-counterfeit auspex. My rosette was scrutinized and tagged. The duty officer voxed my details through to the main building to get authorization. "Doesn't this ever bore you?" I asked one of the desk officers as I waited, folding my papers back into my leather wallet.
"Doesn't what bore me, sir?" he asked.
I hadn't seen Ibbet since the first week. I'd been rotated between a number of supervisors. One told me it was because of shift changes, but I knew it was because none of them liked to deal with an inquisitor, especially a persistent one. That morning it was Major Revel who escorted me in. Revel, a surly young man, was new to me.
"How can I assist you, sir?"
he asked curtly. I sighed. Open logbooks and data slates were piled around the workstation where I had abandoned them the night before. Revel was already calling for a clerk to tidy them away and make space for me before I could explain that I'd made the mess in the first place. He looked at me warily.
"You've been here before."
I sighed again. I had 2 hours. At 11, I was due to meet Inchabel and Bequin and fly out to a village on one of the islands in the Caducades to investigate a rumour that a man there knew something about smuggling. Another waste of time, I was sure. I started in on the air traffic daybook, reading through the lists of orbital transfers for a summer day 2 years earlier. Halfway down the slate was an entry showing a shuttle transfer from an orbiting ship to a landing field near Kazergesh. Gesh was near to one of the pylons frequented by the Sons of Baal. Moreover, on checking, I realized the date put it 3 days before the last incident of cult activity at the pylon. I stoked up the data engine and requested further information on the entry. I was immediately denied. I used a higher decrypt key and was shown a report that withheld both the name of the ship and the source of its authority. I began to get excited and scrolled down. Even the purpose of the visit was restricted. Now I typed in the teeth of my highest decrypt key. The terminal throbbed and chattered, sorting through files and authorizations. The name came up. My elation peaked and plunged away. Neve. The mysterious entry had been a record of a classified mission by the Inquisitor General. Back to square one. The island was cold and bare. A small fishing community clung to the rim of the western bay. Inchabel swung the speeder down onto the cobbled tideway where spread nets had gone stiff with ice.
"How much longer, Gregor?"
Bequin asked me, winding her scarf around her throat. "How much longer what?"
"Until we give up and leave. I'm so sick of this fate-forsaken world."
I shrugged. "Another week?" "Until Candlemas. If we hadn't found anything by then, I promise we'll say goodbye to Cadia." The three of us trudged up the icy walk to a grim tavern overlooking the sea wall. Anchorfish, as tall as men, were hung outside, salted and drying in the winter air. The barman didn't want to know us, but his steward brought us drinks and led us through to a back parlour. He admitted that he had sent the message about the smuggler. The smuggler was here to meet us, he said. We entered the back parlour. A man sat by the roaring grate, warming his jeweled fingers at its flames. I smelled cologne.
"Good morning, Gregor," said Tobias Maxilla.
Despite the shouting coming from the back parlour, the steward brought us herb omelettes and bowls of steaming zarfin broth, along with a bottle of fortified wine.
"Are you going to explain?" asked Inchabel tersely.
"Of course, dear Nathan, of course," Maxilla replied,
pouring a careful measure of wine into each glass.
"Be patient."
"Now, Tobias," I snapped.
"Oh,"
he said, seeing my look. He sat back.
"I confess I have become despondent these last few weeks. You've been so busy, and I've just been waiting up there on the SN. Well, anyway, you've said a number of times that the answer you're searching for depended on one key thing. It depended on you establishing a way of getting past this dire planet's obsessively tight security. Anonymously. And I said to myself, Tobias, that's what you do, even though Gregor doesn't like to think about it. Smuggling, Tobias, is your forte. So I decided to see if I could smuggle myself down here. And guess what?"
He sat back, sipping his glass, looking disgustingly pleased with himself.
"You smuggled yourself onto the planet to prove it could be done?" asked Bequin slowly.
He nodded.
"My shuttle's hidden in the spinneys behind the village. It's amazing how many zipped mouths and blind eyes you can buy with a purse of hard cash round here."
"I don't know what to say," I said. He made an open-handed gesture.
"You told me weeks ago that the Interior Guard recognized no illegal or suspect immigration. Well, I'm here today, literally, to prove that claim wrong. Cady is a tough nut to crack, I'll admit, one of the toughest I've faced in a long and naughty career, but not impossible. As you see."
I sank my wine in a single gulp. "I should sever my links with you for this, Tobias. You know that."
"Oh, pooh, Gregor. Because I've shown up the Cadian Interior Guard as a bunch of fools."
"Because you've broken the law."
No, I haven't. Bent it, possibly, but not broken it. My presence here is entirely legal, under both Cadian local and Imperial general law."
"What?"
"Come on, my old friend. Why do you think my shuttle wasn't blasted out of the heavens this morning by eager Cadian lightning jockeys?"
That was a rhetorical question, by the way.
"Answer. Because when the interceptors came scrambling up to meet me, I broadcast the right security clearance, and that contented them."
"But the day codes are privileged. The counterchecks are triple. They are issued only to those with appropriately high credentials. What authority could you possibly have used to get them?"
"Well, Gregor... yours, of course."
It had been staring me in the face, and it took the grandstanding flamboyance of Maxilla, in his very worst showing-off mode, to reveal it. The reason the Interior Guard had no file on illegal or suspect immigration was because there was nothing of that nature to file. Those that tried to run the strict gauntlet of Cadian security and failed died. The ones that got through were never noticed, because they were using high-level security clearances, masquerading as the sort of official visitor who would not be stopped. People like me. People like Neve.
I never made this trip, Neve said,
staring steadily at the data slate I was showing her.
Oh, this?
Of course not. But someone borrowed your authority code, used it to gain transorbital access. That's how they were getting in. Look here, your code again and again. And before that, the code headers of your predecessor, Gonfal. It goes back 40 years, each and every flurry of activity from the Sons of Baal, and other cults, can be matched by space-to-surface transfers cleared as genuine Inquisition flights.
Emperor, protect me! Neve looked up.
She put down the data slate and called hoarsely for a servitor to bring more lights into her Octostyle sanctum.
But my authority code is protected. How was it stolen? Eisenhorn, yours was used to prove this. How was that stolen?
I paused. It wasn't, not exactly. One of my associates borrowed it to prove the point.
Why doesn't that surprise me? Oh, no matter, Eisenhorn, there's a great deal of difference between you and me. You may have rogue elements in your band who act behind your back in unorthodox, unilateral ways. I do not. My code could not have been abused so.
I accept your point, but it could. Who has access to your code?
No one. No one below me.
But above you?
What?
I said this could be one of ours. A senior inquisitor. A grand master, even. Certainly a wily veteran with enough clout to pull the right strings.
That would require a direct override at the highest levels.
Exactly. Let's look. In the end, that was my adversary's downfall. All the blood and fury and combat we had gone through was as nothing to this prosaic clue that revealed his identity. To steal Neve's authority code and the authority codes of her predecessors, my adversary had been forced to use the clout of his own identity to get into the files. The record of that operation was encrypted, of course. Sitting side by side at the codifier in her sanctum's annex, Neve and I quickly found it. It wasn't even hidden. He never thought anyone would look. But still, it was encrypted. The cryptology was beyond both me and Neve. But together, combining our ranks, we could request, via the Astropathicus, permission to use the Inquisition's most powerful decryption keys. It took 5 hours to approve our joint rating. Just after midnight, a scribe from the Officio Astropathicus brought us the message slate. Midwinter winds shook the sanctum's casements. I was alone with Neve. We had felt it inappropriate to have company. This was a matter of the gravest import. We had talked of this and that to pass the time, though both of us were restless and edgy. She poured generous glasses of Cadian Glaver, which took the edge off the cold. Her aide announced the scribe, and he entered, bowing low, his augmetic chassis grinding beneath his robes. He held out a slate to her, clutched in the mechadendrites that served as his hand. Neve took it and dismissed him. I rose and put down my barely touched glass of spirits. Neve limped over to me, leant on her silver crutch, and held up the slate.
"Shall we?"
she asked. We went into the annex and loaded the slate into the ancient codifier. The limpid green display shifted feverishly with runes. She opened the file we were after and set the key to work. It took a moment or two. Then the identity of the veteran who had used his power to manipulate Neve's code was revealed on the small, green-washed screen. At last, the damned had a name. It shocked even me.
"Glory from above," breathed Inquisitor General Neve. "Quixos."
Amos was arguing with Neve's chief savant, Kutch.
"Quixos is dead, long dead," Kutch maintained. "This is clearly a case of someone using his authority. Quixos is still registered as living by the annals of the Inquisition. As an oversight, no body has ever been retrieved, no proof of death."
"Precisely.
But still, there has been no sign or word from Quixos for over 100 years.
"None that we've seen," I said.
"Eisenhorn's right," Neve said. "Inquisitor Utlin was presumed dead for over 70 years. Then he reappeared overnight to bring down the tyrants of Equesta II.
It's most perturbatory, Amos muttered.
Quixos. Quixos the Great. Quixos the Bright. One of the most revered inquisitors ever to roam the Imperium. His early texts had been required reading for all of us.
He was a legend. At the age of just 21, he had burned the demons out of Artem. Then he had purged the Endorian subsector of its false goat gods. He had transcribed the Book of Ebon. He had broken the wretched subcult of Nurgle that had tainted one of the palaces of Terra itself. He had tracked down and killed the Chaos Marine Banegloss. He had silenced the whisperers of Domactoni. He had crucified the Witch King of Sarpeth on the battlements above his incinerated hive. But there had always been an odor about Quixos, a hint that he was too close to the evil he prosecuted. He was a radical, certainly. Some amongst the Ordos said he was a rogue. Others said, in low, private voices, much worse. To me, he was a great man who had perhaps gone too far. I simply honored his memory and his achievements, because, as far as I had been concerned, he was long dead.
Could he still be alive?
Neve asked.
Madam, not at all, Kutch began.
I don't know why you employ him, I said, pointing dismissively at the Cadian savant. His advice isn't sound.
Well, really,
Kutch huffed.
Shut up and go away,
Neve told him. She stalked across to me and took my empty glass from me.
Go on, then. Your opinion?
You want it? From an adventurer like me? Are you sure, Inquisitor General? She thrust a topped-up glass of glaver into my hand, so hard it sloshed.
Just give me your damned opinion.
I sipped. Amos was staring over at me nervously from the settle by the door. Quixos could be very much alive. He'd be... What now, Amos?
342, sir.
Right. Well, that's no age, is it? Not given augmetics or rejuvenat drugs. Or sorcery.
Damn it,
Neve said. He's an incredibly gifted individual, as his career testifies. He has a reputation, however unwarranted, for straying too far to the radical side. He has dabbled with the warp. We can say that much. Just because we've heard nothing of him these last 100 or more years doesn't mean he isn't still active.
And that activity?
Neve smacked the tip of her crutch down twice on the tiled floor.
What? What? Utilizing demon hosts, perverting inquisitors, hunting for abominated texts like your Necrochuk, triggering the dreadful atrocity of Thracian?
Perhaps. Why not?
Because that would make him a monster. The exact antithesis of everything our order is about.
Well, yes, it would. It's happened before. A powerful man who gets so close to the evil he has sworn to combat, he gets dragged into it. Inquisitor Rubaru, for example.
Yes, yes, Rubaru, I know.
Grandmaster Durkon.
Granted, I remember.
Cardinal Palfro of Mimica, Saint Boniface, also called the Death's Head of a Thousand Tears, intoned Amos.
For the Emperor's sake.
High Lord Van Dyer, I suggested.
All right, all right.
Horus? Amos dared to whisper. There was a long silence.
Great Quixos,
Neve murmured, slowly turning to face me.
Will he be added to that unholy list? Is one of our greatest to be condemned so?
If he must be, I replied.
What do we do? She asked.
We find him. We find out if the passing centuries have truly changed him into the being we fear he is. And if they have, Emperor, pardon me, we declare him heretic and extremis diabolus, and we destroy him for his crimes. Neve sat down hard, staring into her glass. There was a knock at the sanctum's door, which Amos answered. It was Fischig.
Sir, madam,
he said, acknowledging Neve. Well, Fischig?
Further to your discoveries today, we have been monitoring inter-orbit traffic. 2 hours ago, a craft made planetfall at Kashagesh. It cleared Cadian airspace using the Inquisitor General's authority code.
Gesh was the site of the last known cult activity. I gathered up my coat. With your permission, Inquisitor General. Neve rose with me, her face set hard.
With your permission, Inquisitor Eisenhorn, I'd like to come with you.
Kazur Gesh was 3 hours' flight from Kazur Dirth.
Cruel winter had blown in from the upland heaths, and the gun cutter was vibrating its way against powerful ice storms. My band was all aboard, preparing weapons. So was Inquisitor General Neve and a 6-man squad of Cadian elite shock, impassive troopers in winter camo armor, prepping matte-white las rifles and stubbers in the crew bay.
Godthrone, they're tough-ass bastards,
Nail muttered to me as I passed him coming out of the bay. Impressed?
Scared is more like it. Regular Cadian is soldier enough for me. These are elite. The elite of the elite. The Khazarkin.
The what? It wasn't like an experienced fighter to show deference to other fighting men.
The Khazarkin. The Cadian best. And you can imagine what that means. Holy Terra. They're stone killers.
How do you know?
Oh, please, look at their necks. The Caducade Sea Eagle brand. Come to that, just look at their necks. I've seen slimmer trees.
Good thing they're on our side, I said.
I bloody hope so,
Nail returned, and moved forward. The deck lurched again. I walked back down the bay, steadying myself on the overhead hand loops, and approached Neve. She was dressed in Cadian mesh armor and was adjusting her winter hood. I saw she had exchanged her silver crutch for a lift-assisted cane fitted with a compact cylindrical grenade launcher. In my fur coat and body glove armor, I felt underdressed. Your usual attire? I asked.
Necessary clothing. You should come out with me sometime, cult hunting in the islands after dark.
My staff are worried. These men are Khazarkin?
Yes.
Their reputation precedes them.
So did yours.
Good point. But anyway, Neve looked round at the row of Cadian elite.
Captain Ekbar,
she shouted, raising her voice above the roar of the buffet and the thrusters.
Inquisitor General, ma'am,
said the warrior on the end.
Inquisitor Eisenhorn wants reassurance that you are the best of the best and will be careful to watch the backsides of him and his band.
6 snow-visored faces turned to look at me.
We've logged the biospores of you and your company into our sighting auspexes, sir,
Ekbar announced to me.
We couldn't shoot them now, even if we wanted to.
Make sure you don't. My staff and I will be leading the way in. The situation may not call for firepower. If it does, the Vox or Psyka command is Rosethorn. Vox channel is Gamma 9-8. Are you prepared for a psychic summons?
We are prepared for anything,
Ekbar told me. The gun cutter stopped shaking.
We've come out of the storm,
Medea voxed me.
A moment later, she crackled.
I see approach lights. Khazargeth landing field in 2.
The pylon stood 3 kilometers outside the earthworks of Khazargeth. The night was clear and glassy, with a heaven full of stars. The Eye of Terror throbbed dimly at the top of the sky. It seemed to me more lurid and brighter than ever before. Somewhere up there, I knew, orbital detachments of the Cadian Interior Guard were hunting the hidden starship from which the visitors to Khazargeth had come. Neve had scrambled them before we left, with strict orders not to move until we had engaged on the ground. We didn't want our visitors tipped off. My team moved in up through the frost-caked scrub of the moorland slope. The pylon was simply a black, oblong absence of stars. I could hear it moaning. I slid out my main weapon, a storm bolter which I had sprayed green in memory of the prize sidearm I had lost somewhere on Ichan. May Librarian Britnoth forgive me. This storm gun was slightly larger and more powerful, but nothing like so well-engineered as the bolt pistol I had treasured. On my hip, I wore a Cadian hanger, a short, curved, twin-edged saber that replaced my beloved power sword. It was just a simple piece of sharp steel, but I'd had the hierarchs at the Ministerium of Khazardirth make some modifications. Still, in truth, I felt vulnerable going up that slope. Nail was to my left, fielding a combat cannon. Husband to my right, with his trustworthy longlas. Inchabel was to his right, armed with a brace of antique las pistols that had belonged to Inquisitor Roban. Fischig, hefting an old and trusted RBT's issue riot gun, had gone wide to the far left. Beckwin, a long-barreled auto-pistol in her gloved hand, was right beside me. Behind us, Neve and her Khazarkin lurked, waiting for my signal. Amos was aboard the gun cutter with Medea, hovering above the drop point, lights killed. They, rather than Neve and her elite, were my reassurance.
What do you see? I voxed.
Nothing,
replied Hussman and Nail.
I've got an angle into the seat of the pylon, said Inchibel. I see lights.
Confirm that, crackled Fischig, wide to the left. There are men down there. I count 12 portable lights. They've got machines.
Machines?
Handheld. Auspexes.
Measuring again,
Neve whispered over the link.
I'm sure, I said. Then I said, in glossier, Thorn eyes flesh. Rapturous beasts at hand. Aegis to arms, crucible. All points cowled. Razor, Taurus, pathway, pattern, ebony.
My storm gun made a loud click as I racked it. The robed men working in the floodlights around the foot of the pylon froze and slowly turned from their work to look at me. I walked down from the moor through the ice-stiffened bracken, bracing my gun in a pose that could kill any one of them. Beckwin followed me up a few steps behind, her pistol held loosely, ready to swing up. I knew we were covered by Hussman, Inchibel, Nail, and Fischig.
Who is the leader here? I asked, panning my weapon around.
I am,
said one of the robed figures.
Step forward and identify yourself, I said.
To whom?
I raised the rosette plainly in my left hand. Imperial Inquisition. Some of the robed men moaned with dismay. The leader did not. He stepped forward. I could suddenly smell a cold metallic scent, one that was not new to me. A warning that came too late.
The leader slowly drew back his cowl. His angular, cruel head was hairless, and a cold blue light shone out through his skin. Sharpened, steel-tipped horns sprouted from his brow. His eyes were white slits. A demon host.
Cherubael, I said, foolishly.
Stupidly.
Your witless ally is not here, Eisenhorn, said the being, baring his teeth and gleaming with light.
My name is Profanity.